Ralph Sidway is the author of Facing Islam, What the Ancient Church Has to Say About the Religion of Muhammad. You can also find him online at facingislam.org. He is with me today to talk about the very eventful year we've had in terms of Muslim violence against Orthodox persons and communities. Welcome, Ralph.
Well, thank you, Father Chris. Good to be here.
Let me ask you the first question. I mean, what are some of these events in 2013 that stand out in your mind as we consider the intersections of Orthodoxy and Islam?
Yes, actually, some of these did make it to the, to the mainstream media, and of course, I think the fullness of the impact on Orthodox and Coptic and other Eastern Christian communities was not reported fully in our mainstream press. But certainly, the overthrow of Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood organization in Egypt, that was a huge event, and the Muslim Brotherhood had actually warned the Coptic Christians and Pope Tewodros himself that if they moved to depose Morsi, if they stood with the military on that, because there was quite a bit of build-up to that June 30th revolution. There were tens of millions in the streets, Muslims and Christians.
I remember those images on the television.
Just phenomenal, yes. And so the Muslim Brotherhood had warned the Copts that that they would pay the price, they would pay the penalty, and they did. Literally dozens, estimates, confirmed accounts, I should say, at least 60 churches were burned and destroyed, many people killed, tortured, and not just in Egypt proper, but in the Sinai, in the North Sinai, mm-hmm. where there's some strong Coptic communities there. We have a new martyr, Father Mina, up there in North Sinai, and so that was a devastating and long-lasting pogrom, really, is probably the best word to use for it, against Eastern Christians, against the Copts.
Now, if you go into Syria, we know about the kidnapping of the two bishops.
Yes.
And the nuns now from the St. Thecla Monastery, although Al Jazeera has been showing some pictures of the nuns, so we know that, I guess, they're alive. We don't know when those pictures were taken. But Syria, too, I mean, it's become a hotbed there.
It certainly is. I think the difficult thing for us to wrestle with when it comes, especially perhaps to Syria, is that the United States government has been supporting so-called rebel groups that have strong ties to Islamic terrorists. So whether it's Al-Qaeda proper or Al-Nusra or ISIS, which is the Islamic State in Syria.
That's a new one. I learned about that last night. I couldn't believe that. They're more extreme than Al-Qaeda, apparently.
If that's possible,
right.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So, we're in a very frustrating situation where demographically our numbers in the U.S. are small, all Orthodox combined, and yet we somehow must get the ear of our elected officials, the federal government, the Secretary of State and the President, and urge them to step back from their support for these groups. It would be far better to have a diplomatic solution reached without any further Western support for these rebel groups that are specifically targeting Christians just for being Christians. And I really have to emphasize that point. I've seen a lot of reports on the internet with even Christians saying that, no, these are politically motivated attacks. No, they're really not. And that can definitely be attested by the manner in which they're conducted,
But Ralph, that's all well and good if you want to go the diplomatic route. I hear what you're saying. The diplomatic route is clearly the way to go. You don't want to be arming people to bring more of a problem to the area. But then on the other side, then you have governments that are dropping barrel bombs from helicopters on innocent people. So I think a world steps back and they say, okay, what do you do here? Nobody wants to talk. Everybody wants to win. And in the end, nobody wins.
Right. And then you have widespread cynicism in the secular public. You know, I remember reading an article, I can't remember the author of it. It was cited on, I think, by Mark Stein, the conservative writer who gets he can get pretty cutting with his wit.
Yes.
But he cited this other author who had said, gee, it's a shame both sides can't lose. And, you know, there is this tendency to see a kind of a cynicism all around us with our non-Christian or secular neighbors, or even our Christian neighbors who don't have a sensitivity towards Eastern Christians and the plight that they suffer in the Middle East and the Islamic world. And so you're absolutely right. What do we do? You know, it's a horrible dilemma all the way around.
Now, I've been doing my research in preparation, of course, for our talking together, and I noticed that we have the issues, of course, in Nigeria, in Africa. Can you speak briefly about that?
Yeah, Africa's exploding all around. Central Africa is just a real hotbed. Nigeria, of course, there was a horrific attack just a couple of days ago with over 100 people confirmed killed. The main group in Nigeria that's doing all this is called Boko Haram, and Haram, some people will be familiar with, is the Arabic word that means
shame.
Forbidden.
Shame or forbidden, right?
Exactly, and Boko is kind of slang for books, but the full name of this group is Western Ways, or Western Learning is Forbidden. So Boko Haram is their name, and they are targeting Christians specifically, very, very fiercely. Mm-hmm. And they're even converting many of the formerly peaceful Muslim tribesmen in the outlying areas to do some of their dirty work for them. So they're actually fomenting anti-Christian zeal all throughout the Nigeria. Then there's Sudan. Sudan is, you may remember recently, just a couple of years ago, South Sudan was able to successfully secede and create a quasi-Christian, a Christian state separate from North Sudan, which is primarily Muslim and was heavily persecuting them. But that persecution still continues there. Then we have Central African Republic, where there have been, again, very fierce outbreaks of persecution of Christians by a Muslim rebel separatist group. And the interesting thing about that is that that's one of the places where the Muslims are actually only 15% of the population in Central African Republic. So we're seeing these fierce explosions of violence. And then, of course, you've got Somalia and Eritrea, Yemen, of course. Africa is a horrible hotbed.
It's frustrating. I know when I sit and I watch, become sort of a news junkie, having gone into the media aspect of ministering to folks and trying to gather as much information as possible. And I have to be honest with you, there are times I just shut the television off because I don't want to hear another report, because I see that groups are not able, people are just not able to sit down and talk things through and yet remain respectful of different people's viewpoints and faiths. So I want to go a little bit, and we don't do this normally, into the political arena for a minute and say, how do you think the U.S. foreign policy has either impacted or not impacted these different situations for Orthodox Christians around the world? I remember Bosnia and people within the Orthodox world were furious with the administration then when they went in there and bombed. So talk to us a little bit about that without taking a side here, but just trying to unpack it for us so we can understand it better.
Yeah, I think probably the easiest thing to just notice is that American foreign policy, which inherits a great deal of its, you know, kind of logical nature, its kind of pragmatic nature from the British foreign policy that extends deep back into certainly the mid-19th century, and that's a very pragmatic foreign policy that that is looking for power dynamics, and so those who are exerting power and influence are typically the ones with whom our government will try to establish connections and try to influence their behavior. And
I mean, has it become that cynical that everything in the world is based on money and oil at this point?
Yeah, money, oil, power, security, and so yeah. The example in Bosnia is very perplexing for us, there's also I tend to think that there's a weariness in the West about concerning Christianity. And you know, an excellent article I just posted recently on my blog. One of the it was a French philosopher, I can't remember his name, but he had made the comment that Eastern Christians are too Christian to be of interest to the left, the liberals, but they're too Eastern to be of interest to the Christians in America. You know, the Protestant evangelicals who actually do have numbers to be influential, and that is that's kind of getting off topic there. But I think basically what we see is an American pragmatic foreign policy, which has seen us reaching out to Muslim groups to try to influence them along the road to democracy, a democratic form of government, to give as many minority groups as possible a say in the running of these countries. And under President Obama, I think that's been accelerated to the point where the president's administration, this current administration, has sided openly with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, causing a huge outcry among Egyptians, both Christians and Muslims there, against the Muslim Brotherhood, who they perceive as being supporters of terrorism. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, we see our administration involved deeply in Syria and the fallout from that. So,
well, the issue of us in Syria, there's attempts to now have this truce, peace talks,
right.
We just keep hearing that they're keep failing. I don't know if we can blame that on the United States of America. I don't think we can.
I think we can clearly blame it on
you know, you can only take responsibility for that which you're responsible for. And the responsibility lies in Syria with the people there. They have to get along. It's to their betterment to get along so they can live in peace, whether they're Christian or non-Christian. Let's talk about the...
Can I make a follow-up on
please.
That? Just very, very briefly, just as a reminder, it doesn't provide us any answers. But in Syria, we have a unique situation. It's not a purely a civil war, as we would understand it, mm-hmm. with indigenous Christians kind of caught in the crossfire between warring factions, but rather most of the rebel fighters are actually Muslim jihadists motivated by the desire to establish an Islamic state that actually goes beyond merely Syria, but into Iraq, Lebanon, and Jordan.
The whole area is a powder keg. We know that.
Yes, yes. And so there's a lot of foreign elements in Syria that are really driving that warfare.
It's almost, if you go back, Ralph, into history books, and you see the things that went on, you know, decades, hundreds, and centuries ago. You see this Muslim Christian thing or Christian Muslim thing coming back, and I hope we don't read about it in the history books, or our children and grandchildren and their grandchildren don't read about it in history books, that we ignored what was going on, that we did something. The question, really, I guess, the million-dollar question is, what do you do? Now, we've been talking about all the bad that happened in 2013. Let's kind of switch it a minute, and let's go to the movement in the right direction this past year. I mean, what has happened, in your opinion, that says, okay, there's hope, there is something good happening?
Yes, you know, we're actually seeing some Orthodox missionary efforts in the Islamic world and in areas that where you would be surprised to hear about, and first among them, I think, is the Orthodox mission in Pakistan, and that's a really good sign. They have just successfully completed their new church. This is a really serious initiative. Of course, they're not under imminent threat, but you do notice when you see pictures of it, and you can go to sites like Pravoslavy or Pravmir. Or you can search on my blog, facingislam.org, and their images posted. And they, you know, like a lot of churches in Egypt, we're familiar with seeing images of walls around the perimeter of the church. So there's that aspect of it. But this is a huge success, and it also provides an opportunity for Orthodoxy to bring stability into these countries and provide a solid presence. It's interesting. I think that a lot of times it's Christian house churches that are targeted because they're easy targets. Mm-hmm. They're soft targets. So ironically, if there's a strong, robust Orthodox presence, that actually has a potential to survive.
Now, we know in Russia that clearly there are millions of Orthodox Christians. And I believe in my research, I found something about Russia emerging as a protector of the indigenous Christian in different parts of the world. Have you seen that as well?
Absolutely. I've written about that extensively, especially last summer. Last summer there were celebrations in Moscow and Kiev for the 1025th anniversary of Christianity in Russia, and centered around that, the church and the Russian government drew to Moscow representatives of all the local Orthodox churches, and both Patriarch Kirill of the Russian Church and President Vladimir Putin reached out to them and affirmed and reaffirmed again and again their commitment to caring for and providing solace to, and wherever possible, to influence for the better the situation for indigenous Christians in the Middle East, in the Islamic world. And that's a huge commitment. And actually, one of my favorite excerpts from that whole thing, I did a massive reading to write a few articles for that. And Metropolitan Hilarion of the Russian Church, who's the head of the church's Department of External Church Relations, he's number two to Patriarch Kirill. Metropolitan Hilarion, in an interview, stated specifically that when President Putin was running for re-election, that he approached him in a public forum and asked him, we want to see the indigenous Christians protected. We want you to place that at the forefront of all your foreign policy decisions. And Putin responded strongly affirming that that was his goal. And I think we saw that. I think we saw when he tried to broker a ceasefire back in September, that he was driving to try to reach out and do something that would prevent even more bloodshed from occurring. But we know that the Russian church is really motivated, and the Russian government is, with its resources, everyone's struggling with the issue, but I think is trying to help Christians in Syria especially, but throughout the Islamic world.
And I think that those people who would visit your website will see that there's a belief, I guess, that the rise of Islamic extremism gives us an opportunity to spread the Orthodox Christian gospel. Can you talk briefly about that?
Yes. I'm so glad you phrased it exactly that way. I think we must fight against the temptation to be discouraged or to be faint-hearted, and instead really look at this, in spite of the great suffering our brothers and sisters are going through, we need to look at this as an opportunity and an urgency that we must step out in faith and try to raise awareness here in America of Eastern Christians throughout the Middle East, but also throughout Central Asia, all the stands. When I pray around the globe, I pray for the Christians in Pakistan, Afghanistan, mm-hmm. Kyrgyzstan, all the stands, but then also Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, the Philippines. There are conflicts from Muslim extremist groups in all these areas. And so we have an opportunity and a duty, I think, to do all we can to educate and inform the American public, our elected officials, our Orthodox brothers and sisters. This is what you're doing right now. And try to bring this to the forefront. And, interestingly enough, I think it's almost serendipitous, maybe a divine providence. Demographically speaking, Orthodox Christians in the United States have almost exactly the same percentage of the population as Muslims in the United States.
Mm.
And that's not a figure that we should just kind of gloss over. I think what that tells us is that we have a responsibility to be more visible, vocal, informative, and influential. A good example of that is the announcements concerning the St. Nicholas Church that will be rebuilt at the site of Ground Zero. It looks like a beautiful facility, and that gives us an opportunity to have a visual symbol of Orthodoxy bouncing back from the 9/11 terrorist attack.
Let me do this for a moment. Let's go to your website. I want to read just the three or four sentences that I think knock it out of the park, and you can respond to it. America is deeply confused, spiritually speaking. The Duck Dynasty flap illustrates this. People are defining the message and health of Christianity by what reality TV stars say in public. But orthodoxy offers something far deeper, something unseen and mystical. Our understanding of the incarnation, of Christmas, of what this means for the destiny of mankind, is the most radical, explosive idea ever. Agnostics, atheists, and Muslims in America who reject Christianity are the very people we want to reach. Can we turn our parishes into spiritual dynamos, energizing the faithful to be bearers of the light in the world? People are starving for the living word. What will we do with this opportunity? My goodness, that is probably the most powerful paragraph I've read in a long time. What can we do?
Well, thanks be to God that he gives people that stumble around like myself the ability to string together some words like that. It sounds surprising to have you read that back to me. Yes, what can we do? I think that we've got to get serious about our faith and be more fearless in sharing with friends and neighbors initially in a local sense what makes us different. And it's not the ritual, it's not the liturgy per se, it's not the smells and bells, as some like to call it. It's not that. It's really our understanding of God and his revelation to us, his coming to us through his Son. And it's our understanding of what, in a fancy word, Orthodox Christian anthropology tells us about the nature of man. It is such an exalted understanding of the destiny and the calling of man that if we can convey that, then I think we would see some hardened hearts softened. Father Seraphim Rose was very fond of saying that the people we want to reach out to are the atheists who burn with an existential hatred for a false understanding of God. They've never met the Orthodox God, the God of Orthodoxy. And I think that's what we have to stand for, not minutely define our differences with Protestants or Catholics, but to say, no, it's not, we don't define ourselves in these narrow ways. Instead, we're talking about the most amazing thing that could ever possibly have happened, that God became man so that man might become divinized, so man might become godlike, and find ways to share that. And so that's part of that spiritual dynamo.
Let's get practical for a minute, come down to the core and say, what are some of the things you'd like to encourage our listeners to do this year?
Yeah, one of my friends and correspondents recently had Father, I think it's Father Alexander Gossettis, who's very, very worthy author, who's written about comparative religions from an Orthodox perspective. He came and spoke to my friend's parish. And then using that as a foundation, this friend of mine, and I'm not mentioning names simply to kind of keep anonymity for everybody, he is launching a monthly series on Orthodoxy and Islam, or understanding Islam from an Orthodox perspective. And it's a four-week series, and it starts repeating every month. And he's leading this, and that's exactly the kind of personal initiative that any one of us can do. That, if we don't do well up in front of people or something, no problem. But help to organize, help to spread the word, help to educate. And most parishes have some sort of educational program, whether a couple of times a year or ongoing. Ask our priests to please let's do something on Islam from a Christian perspective, from an Orthodox perspective, and try to inform and educate. And then I think some people will definitely feel called to correspond with, to write letters to our elected officials, our congressmen, our senators. And personally, I think the time is ripe for some sort of an Orthodox lobbying group that could draw on the resources of groups like IOCC and the OCMC to get reports from the ground that can then be shared in a political context to present a more well-rounded view of how American policy is affecting truly innocent communities, innocent Christian communities, who for generations have been just trying to live their lives and are now caught in the crossfire by all this boiling up around them. So just a few ideas there.
Very good. Thank you, Ralph. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thanks, Father Chris. Thanks for having me. It's been a great blessing.
This has been a production of the Orthodox Christian Network.